Blog Talk Radio.
Well, if you'll bear with me, things are not cooperating this evening. The studio doesn't appear to be very responsive to my inputs, so I guess we'll forego. Oh, there we go. There's some intro music. Go. A little bit of intro music wasn't what I had in mind, and as is normal, Murphy's Law seems to rule this evening, so we'll press on. Good evening. It's Monday evening. Once again, time for Madison CPC Open Rebellion Radio and the Voice of Reason with your host, Michael Murphy. Well, it's been quite a week. Quite a lot of stuff has gone on here this last several days, and there's a little bit of, I think there's something going on tonight, isn't there? I'll try to remember what it is. There's something going on after the show, and I'll see if it doesn't come to mind. It seems like it's maybe kind of important, but we'll get to it here in a second. Just want to remind you of the weekly lineup we have here. Of course, since it's Monday, this is the Voice of Reason. Excuse me. 7 p.m. Central every Monday. We spend an hour together talking about things that I want to talk about. Generally, things that are big in the news, something I've written about, or whatever like that. And tonight's going to be no exception to that. It's not only something I've written about and something that's been in the news, it's also something I'm very passionate about. And we'll get to that here in a little bit. On Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6 p.m. Central, we have a two-hour show, and we have a tag team host of Danielle and Dina and Richard that swap off. Sometimes they're together, sometimes they're alone. They do interviews, they do debates. They have quite a bit of good stuff going on over there, so we invite you to take a look at what they have going over there. And on Wednesday, Cindy has Cindy's Corner, and She does a little bit of everything, and we think you'll enjoy getting over there and taking maybe a little bit of a break from some of the other serious issues in our nation and in our lives, and get a little bit of a break and see what she has to offer over there. And, of course, we always want to plug our website, madisoncpc.com. That's as in James Madison, but there's no apostrophe, so it's madisoncpc.com. And, of course, if you want to join us at any time, obviously if you're listening and not on the phone, then you're listening online, and that's one way and an avenue in which you can listen. And the other way is to call in at 773-897-6299. And, of course, if you're not listening online or not on that phone number right there, then you can't hear me. But if you are listening online, that is the number to call. If you want to ask a question, if you have a comment, we'd love to hear from you. Just press 1 so that I'll know that you want to do more than just listen. I'll get a little bit of an icon that'll let me know that you want to have something to say. So if you just kind of keep that in mind, I'll try to remind you of that number. I sometimes get busy talking and kind of forget, but we do try to keep up with those things. As is customary, I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the events, maybe not of the day or whatever like that, but of the last few days, some things that have happened. And of course, the headlines on Madison's, and we're going to take a look at some of those right now. Evidently, somebody asked Hillary if she supported sanctuary cities, and her campaign won't say. And I'm going to have to get rid of that phone. Sorry about that, folks. there wasn't anybody else around to answer the phone. So Hillary won't say whether her campaign supports sanctuary cities. Well, I think we could all guess. So it's one of those things that go in there and take a look at that article. I try to not go into too much detail on these articles because I want you guys to go over to the website and read these for yourself. We've got a bunch of good writers that are on staff as well as contributors, and we also share some things from some other websites. So we try to be a one-stop shop place for you, where you can come get news and comments and et cetera like that. I did sort of mention a little something going on tonight, and I guess one of the articles here is about that. Will Trump mention build a wall? The thing is there's a you can bet on about anything. You can bet on the coin toss at the Super Bowl. You can bet on all sorts of things. If you go to Europe, betting is really huge. You can bet on just about anything. And of course, this is no exception. Of course, tonight is the first presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And the premise, of course, of this question is what are the odds that he will mention build a wall? Go in there and take a look at that. That's kind of interesting. An icon from my generation. I remember, I don't remember Arnold Palmer not being Arnold Palmer. You know what I mean? Arnold Palmer, when I was young, was one of the first greats of the sport of golf. He brought golf to the masses. Golf had before been probably a little bit more of an elitist kind of a sport, things like that. But Arnold Palmer brought it to the regular folks and made it quite popular. And he'll be missed. David Gregory says it's crazy not to acknowledge the reality of systemic racism. Well, I guess I'm crazy because I don't acknowledge it. I'm sorry. But to go ahead and read that article. Senator Rubio warns the next 4 months could be President Obama's most damaging yet. And, of course, what he's alluding to there is the terrorism and the people that he's releasing from Guantanamo. So you might kind of check on that. Another shooting in Houston happened the other day. There were 6 wounded. The suspect is dead. As of the time this was written, it was not clear as to whether it was terrorist related or not, or just crazy related. But anyway, of course, we've got this day in history that is on online every day. Crystal puts that out for us, and that's one of the more popular things. Whenever I share that, I get a lot of comments on it. People like to just kind of peruse down through that, and there's a pretty long list of things that have occurred on each day in history, and it's kind of interesting kind of to see through the years what all has happened on that particular day. Sometimes some interesting things share dates. New research indicates Alzheimer's and other neurodegenerative diseases are contagious. That would be rather scary, I would think. I've had my father had Alzheimer's, passed away 3 years ago, and my grandmother had it, and it's a very debilitating disease, and it would be nice if we could figure out some ideas about what causes it and maybe prevent it. Cures are a different story, but if we could at least slow it down or prevent it, that would be a big advantage. Voters are predicting significant military, economic, and civil risk from the Trump election, according to a SurveyMonkey poll. And of course, this is just a reflection. I'll tell you what it's a reflection of, as far as I'm concerned, it's a reflection of the media, because the media decides what you're going to hear. And we try at Madison's to give you all the sides and all the angles. We try not to sugarcoat it. At the risk, if it's unfortunate that we're in the atmosphere that we're in now, that if I tell you the truth about somebody, for instance, there's some things about Donald Trump I like, and there's some things about him that I do not like. But if I criticize him in any way, I'm considered a never Trumper, or I'm bashing him or something like that. And all it is I prefer to come down on the side of the Constitution, on the side of freedom. the side of the Republic, the way this country was originally intended to be. We're going to talk about that a little bit more during the show tonight. But I think that it behooves us to know the truth about people we're voting for. And so if that's good news or that's bad news, we still need to know it. So at the risk of angering people or whatever, you might take a look at that, see what that poll finds, because all it is a reflection of what people think. It's not a reflection of reality. It's a reflection of what people think. Miami Marlins lost a 24-year-old pitcher, Jose Fernandez, always a young star like that. Doesn't even have to be a star. A young person that dies untimely is always always sad news, and we feel for him, as for for his family and his teammates. Pro-abortion leader compares the Hyde Amendment restrictions on taxpayer-funded abortion to slavery. Yeah, that's kind of funny. We have slavery where somebody is taken by force and then put in a situation where they've got no option but to do your bidding. And that's the comparison to the Hyde Amendment, which essentially is that no taxpayer funds can be used to pay for abortion. So in other words, if I don't use my tax dollars to pay for your abortion, that's the same thing as taking you and locking you in a on a plantation or in a building or whatever like that and forcing you into slavery. That's a bridge too far as far as I'm concerned. That's a bridge way too far. The next state of international terrorism, there's a lot of warnings over that. One might guess what those things are, but of course, as things escalate, as things always do, I think we can expect to maybe see some chemical attacks or maybe even some nuclear sort of related attacks, maybe not a nuclear explosion, but a dirty bomb sort of thing. So it's only going to get worse as long as this keeps going the way it is. So my take on it, of course, is the fact that if we won't admit who our enemy is and won't call them out by name, it's kind of hard to kind of pinpoint who they are. And when we're looking at 3-year-olds and their diapers and stuff like that going through security and then waving other people through because of what their religion happens to be or something, we're a little bit off base. And I think enough said on that. The IRS is to target 20 million Americans who didn't buy Obamacare. Well, of course, that's something else we're going to talk about tonight a little bit in a manner of speaking. It's a crazy situation when you think about it. How is our nation set up? Do you honestly believe that our founders ever envisioned that the federal government would force you to buy anything? And I know I mentioned this last week when I was talking with a caller. I said, I've got a bed and breakfast here. And while it might be kind of cool for the government to come along and say, everybody has to spend at least one night a year at my bed and breakfast, that would be financially a nice benefit to me. However, that would not be very good for liberty. And so I've always been one to fall down. I said, I would rather do without the business than to have people forced into something that they don't want. As we look a little bit further here, I think that's about, there's a couple others that I wanted to talk about here. FBI documents reveal Obama used a pseudonym in emails with Clinton. Well, now people are trying to get this information, find out what pseudonym he used and all like that, and maybe what he had to say. And of course, the administration declares that they have a executive privilege and that's they're not able to do that. We're not going to release that. And I'm thinking, well, if he used a pseudonym, then it wasn't really him. Okay, never mind. Bridgegate. Of course, Chris Christie involved. That's something that got thrown up a long time ago. Kind of interesting how that works out. We've got Bridgegate was thrown up. It was all denied and everything like that. Now there's a trial that's ongoing, and evidently Christie's been implicated in it. and there's talk of possible impeachment. Of course, Christie's office says this is all ridiculous. And once again, things just go on and go on and go on. And of course, I did mention the we do have this little bit of a debate this evening, and I hope you'll stick with us because the debate does not start till our show is over. And so we're gonna take a look at that maybe a little bit later. But for right now, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then I'm going to bring my my guest on here shortly.
So, you're still using the hotel website with the gentleman that played Captain Kirk and Denny Crane, or the goon with the beard in the strange uniform, or the talking lawn gnome to book hotels, car rentals, bed and breakfasts, or cruises. Are you kidding me? Let me let you in on something. You're not really saving money with those. Those are the new retail. Why pay retail when you can book your travel accommodations and pay wholesale? In fact, up to 75% off of standard pricing. Snazzy Traveler is the travel equivalent of the big box wholesale members clubs. But you don't have to go and look for a parking space and wait in line to check out. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars on travel. And best of all, it's like having the services of concierge for just 27 cents a day. I'm serious. Snazzy Traveler has all the hotels and B&Bs you're looking for, and more besides. They have all the top car rental companies and cruise ships and tours. But if you want to save big money and get great service, there's only one way you can get the deals I'm talking about. Go to our website, MadisonCPC.com, MadisonCPC.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on the Snazzy Traveler banner ad and get signed up. You'll soon discover why Inc. 500 rates Snazzy Traveler America's fastest growing travel website. Be smart. Be snazzy. Don't pay retail. Snazzy Traveler.
All right. Welcome back after a little break. Now, as I promised, we are going to get into the evening's planned event. I'm going to bring a guy on here. I'm just going to go ahead and bring him on, and I'm going to introduce him. Dave, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Excellent. Loud and clear. All righty. David Snyder is a not only somebody that I am familiar with from seeing. Actually, I got to see you on closed circuit TV this last week, which was pretty cool. But you were guarding the flags much of the time I saw. It was a very interesting thing. I'm very passionate about convention estates, and we've talked about it in the past on the radio, and I've written about it quite a bit. And before I start off on some other tangent, David, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and what your position and all like it is with convention estates.
Oh, thanks, Mike. You bet. I'm a regional director for Convention Estates Project, and I've been doing that for about the last year for the group. And prior to that, I was a full-time employee and a volunteer for the group for about 2 years in the state of Kansas as the state director here in Kansas. And I think that's where I first met you, Mike, obviously, when I was out giving talks, and I think I was somewhere near where you lived, and I believe that's where we first met. But I know you've been a strong supporter of Convention Estates. We certainly appreciate that. And what I do now is I travel the middle part of the country, spreading the word about Convention Estates and helping the grassroots, assisting them. And basically, I walked away from a career of 18 years in the banking industry, and this is what I get to do full time. It's kind of a dream, and I'm not really sure that I actually have a job some days, because it's really more of a passion, and somehow I do receive a paycheck, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's always nice when you can do what you love and get paid for it. And obviously they're a little bit crazy because you were doing it for free, and then they started paying you.
Yeah, so. Isn't that kind of crazy? Yeah. So I'm very blessed in the fact that I do get to do something that I'm passionate in. You know, I'm not quite making maybe what I used to work for, but that's okay. You know, again, yep. I think that doing something I love and am passionate about, and I'm not scared to travel. So I get around to several states, and matter of fact, my region's right now about 10 states. So anywhere from Texas to Michigan to North Dakota and kind of in between is my region.
Right. I know I've talked to you a couple of times and you were on the road. You were here, I think, a while back. I think you were in North Dakota when I sent you a message or something. So, yeah, it's no telling where you'll be. Like I said, let's discuss a little bit. Let's kind of start at the beginning. People maybe don't really realize. I'm meeting all the time. I'm meeting people that when I say Article 5, they look at me kind of cross-eyed. And, you know, and it's one of the shortest articles in the Constitution.
Right.
Probably one of the most important. I guess just tell me a little bit about how Convention of States got started, and what we're trying to do, and then we'll get into what happened this last week here after a bit.
Sure. So, Convention of States started roughly about 3 years ago, just a little bit over 3 years ago, and it was a brainchild of an individual named Michael Ferris, who's very, very well known in the homeschooling communities as the leader of the Homeschool Legal Defense Fund. And basically in the 1980s, in the early 90s, he was traveling around the country trying to make homeschooling legal in all 50 states. And most people in the homeschooling network of individuals know who he is, and he's very well known in that community. So he's also a constitutional attorney. He's actually argued before the Supreme Court, as well as argued one of the very few attorneys ever to argue Article 5 in court. So he's definitely a well-versed individual on the Constitution, and especially in Article 5. He was very instrumental in defeating the ERA back in the 80s and 90s as well. He was side by side with Phyllis Schlafly back then, going around the country and making sure that it was actually his legal argument that was ultimately upheld or actually ruled in favor of to defeat the ERA. So he's got a long history in as a legal scholar, and as well as the founder of Patrick Henry College. He's still to this day the chancellor of that institution. So he went with this particular idea to Mark Meckler roughly about just over 3 years ago, and his idea. Mark thought it was somewhat of a good idea, and they kind of got together with their grassroots knowledge. Mark Meckler's background was with co-founding the Tea Party Patriot organization, and they basically, Michael Ferris wrote down a few key things that he knew that had to happen from his days in the homeschooling movement, to this day, that's the blueprint that the Convention of States still operates under.
This is another deal that probably started over a cup of coffee and a napkin, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly how it started out, and it's really interesting because somebody else at that very same time was coming up with a new book idea and actually got ready to publish it, and his name was Mark Levin, and he came out with a book called The Liberty Amendments roughly right at 3 years ago. But it was not in conjunction at all with the Convention of States project, but it was exactly the same idea that was basically being percolated about 30 miles apart. So Mike Ferris and Mark Levin live about 30 miles apart, never had met, and were coming up with the same exact idea and launching it at the same exact moment. So
that's very cool.
You can call that whatever it is, but that's really what got me involved. It was the book, Liberty Amendments. It certainly spoke to me and energized me, and I started looking out for ways to help and do whatever I can, and that's really when I stumbled upon the Convention of States project. I signed up right away to be a volunteer and signed up to be the state director, and lo and behold, they selected me. So the rest is history.
And like you say, it stems from of course, you know, the frustration by many conservatives, especially over the fact that we've got a runaway government. They don't know how to say no to themselves, whether it's spending or regulations. There's just no end to it. And then of course you add in the Supreme Court, all the agencies and everything like that, and it's just impossible to keep up. And I believe our founders knew that would happen. I believe our founders, you know, they were not ignorant of history. They had watched this long train of events, if I can borrow that phrase, that had happened over history, and they were able to look at it and say, well, you know what? Every time people get power, they let it go to their heads, and it's either an effort to gain money or power or both, and they have a tendency to kind of forget about the people that they're supposed to be taking care of. And so the founders put this Article 5 in the Constitution, which in encapsulated way says that there can be amendments can be made to the Constitution, and they need to be brought up either by two-thirds of Congress or two-thirds of the states. And then once they're brought up, they can be once they're proposed, then they can be put forth, and then three-fourths of the states have to vote in favor of before they become part of the Constitution. And we've never done it with the states before, have we?
No, we've gotten close a couple of times, and it's always spurred Congress to act before the states could actually get the prerequisite of two-thirds calling for the convention. So there's a history of calling for a convention. It just never has gotten to the prerequisites.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's exactly
right. And I know there's a lot of feeling that when this move, what are there eight states that have passed now at the resolutions?
There is eight states that's passed
yep.
the Convention of States model resolution, yes.
Right. And I know there's a lot of feeling that once they start getting up into that mid to upper 20s, that Washington's going to start getting very nervous.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and like I said, like I kind of alluded to in the past, there is a history of that, you know, and you can thank the Convention of States process or the Article 5 convention process for giving us a very bad amendment, which, in my opinion, is, you know, the direct election of senators. There was a call amongst the states to have a convention, and Congress fought it for many, many years, and then until they got within one state, and then they, lo and behold, called for that amendment that was quickly actually ratified by the states. Now, hindsight's 20/20 when you're looking at that particular amendment. That was, in my opinion, really got us in a lot of the troubles that we're in. So,
But the only way
to go and fix that is through another amendment. You can't have, if we're all constitutionalists probably that are listening to this program, and the only way to amend the Constitution is through another act of Article 5, and I really don't think Congress is going to ever change that particular amendment. And the only way the states can get back into the practice of naming our senators is if we repeal that particular amendment. And the only way that's going to happen is through a convention.
Right. That was truly one of the final nails in the coffin, so to speak, to states' rights, because our founders set things up to where the people had representation and the states had representation, and then suddenly the states lost theirs, and so that became a very big loss for the states in relation to their sovereignty and their ability to control things in Washington. Now they're just kind of along for the ride, it's kind of hard for them to put their foot down, so to speak, because the government wields the big hammer and the purse strings, and can say, well, you know, you play along. I think back when the national speed limit was lowered. You remember when there was maybe you're too young.
No, I remember it. Now 55 saved lives, right?
Yeah. I remember when that was first put down. And all like that. There were some of the states, especially some of the western states, that have the big long straight roads and all like that. Said, I don't think we're going to do that. And the federal government did what? They said, well, there goes your federal highway funds.
If you don't do it, you don't get the funds.
So you play along or you don't get it. And that's, people don't understand. They talk about doing, we don't need to do these amendments. We can just nullify. You know, we can just say, well, we're not going to play along. Well, the government says we're not going to pray along too, and then what do? You know,
right? They take your funds. Take your funds because right now, and the other amendment that came right after the direct election of the senators, obviously, or along with it, I should say, is the tax. And that's really, those two amendments have given all the power to the federal government. And the federal government right now has the ability to directly tax individuals within the state. And so the states have to beg for the money back from the federal government.
Right.
And the founders absolutely would be beside themselves if they would have ever thought that that was going to be a possibility. But here we are 100 plus years later, and we're still living under that reality. And Congress is never going to fix this because they're in control. The federal government's in control of the states because of these things.
Right.
And this is the only solution. And then people always say, well, we got those bad amendments because of this process. And that's not exactly true. Yes, it was a popular movement at the time, but you got to also remember that those calls were very limited, you know, just limited to a direct election to senators. That same as this particular call, and the call that we're looking to do right now is to place further limits on the size, scope, and jurisdiction of the federal government. We're trying to put the federal Leviathan back in the box that the founding fathers intended it to stay in, and
right.
undo some of the wrongs of the past. And not just as amendments, but we've got some Supreme Court rulings that are just outside of original intent. And the only redress that you have is effectively another Supreme Court ruling or an amendment to the Constitution. You know, we've done that in the past. You know, we had to overturn Dred Scott. So, of
right.
course, we had to pass an amendment for that.
Right.
So the precedence is there for amendments. That's why we have to go through this process.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, unfortunately, it's hard. Fortunately, it's hard so people don't just cram things down our throats all the time. And I'm thinking
right.
back when you're talking about the 17th Amendment and all, I'm thinking we also did not have social media, we didn't have TV, even radio for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So there was very limited. So it was just newspapers and stuff. And so the information was really fairly easy controlled. And I know a lot of people
yeah.
believe that the reason for the 17th Amendment was strictly because, well, some states didn't have representation and they needed their representation because the legislatures were, and I'm thinking, well, yeah, those states are the ones that didn't have representation due to their own inaction. And so
That's
they
right.
could have, They did without, and
That's
guess
exactly
what?
Right.
you
yeah.
know, it's their fault. It's their fault,
That's
not
their
ours.
Fault. That's exactly right. And you know what we learn in our history books is obviously not always exactly what happened. And it was a giant progressive movement, and that was part
absolutely.
Of it. And they called it
absolutely.
And they call it democracy, and that's how
yep.
they sell it.
Yep.
And I always have to remind people we were never supposed to be a democracy. It's
a
representative
exactly
republic.
Right.
So there's reason for that. And that was the state's voice in Washington, D.C., was the Senate. And now the states don't have that voice, and it's been slowly eroding the power of the states until we're now the states are basically the slave of the federal government, which – the states created the federal government, so it's a role reversal with those two particular amendments.
Right. I'm always saying, I said, you know, the people gave rise to the states, the people formed the states, and then the states formed the federal government to give them protections and stuff that they couldn't do for themselves, and
mm-hmm.
then it, like I said, then it turned around and the federal government is eating its creator. And I said, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like Dr. Frankenstein, you know, creates the monster. And then
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden the monster turns on everybody, you know, and that's kind of what we've got.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, as in Frankenstein, they got pitchforks and torches, you know, and all like that. I'm wondering if, you know, if we can't get the Article 5 going, we may be down to the pitchforks and torches.
I tell you, before I read the Liberty Amendments, I was to that point. I think I was amassing pitchforks and now I have hope. I still have hope in the Republic at this point, and I understand much more after doing the research myself and going back to the source documents and the writings of Madison and of the actual convention that gave us Article 5. You know, and that's the thing about Article 5. It's not an amendment. It's actually part of the original Constitution.
Right.
If you go back to the notes that Madison wrote about George Mason standing up and saying that they had made an error and they were about ready to wrap up this thing, and he's putting a monkey wrench into it, saying, "We screwed
right.
up, man. We forgot
yeah.
to address a check and balance between the federal and state government." And if we're foolish to think that the federal government, once they become tyrannical, would ever propose limits on their tyranny. And they
exactly.
had to put another thing in there. And this is way before the 10th Amendment was, you know, this was a couple of years before.
Oh, right.
The,
yeah, this is about 3 years, right.
Right. And yep. and everybody has to remember there was no Bill of Rights for the first few years. So
right.
This was the redress that the founding fathers put into the Constitution that they intended states to use.
In my line of way of thinking, I guess, and of course, this is also having lived through this time of history. If I was going to err and only have one of them, I would have only the states, not
yeah,
only
absolutely.
The Congress. But
yeah,
but,
absolutely.
But
yeah.
But anyway,
the best part about Article 5 convention process, it totally bypasses the federal government. It's a state-run process. The states set the rules. They meet. They send their own commissioners. They give the commissions to their commissioners. They empower them with certain duties, what they want them to do from each state. And not all states are going to be the same, and that's okay. That's federalism. And
right.
They go and they meet. The only thing that can do is make proposals. And the part that everybody always has a conniption of is they're going to go meet and have this convention. That's the part that nobody knows what a convention is. So
right.
that's why we wanted to have this event that we had last week. And that's the main reason to get everybody together for the simulated convention that we held.
Right, and that's largely why, of course, I'm having you on tonight, because that just finished up on Friday. And there was, and like you say, there's people talk about that don't know history. People talk about the fact that, well, the first convention was a runaway. And so they say, well, if we have another convention, it'll run away and we'll lose our entire Constitution, or they'll repeal the Second Amendment, or they'll whatever
right.
like that. And so. So I, you
right.
know, like I said, first of all, you need to study history and learn the truth, because none of that was true. And the second thing, is we did a little test this last week, didn't we?
Yes, we did. You know, having representatives and state senators from all 50 states in attendance to an event, that's never happened in history. You know, they obviously go to conferences and things like that, but we actually had. Sitting representatives, sitting senators, some past representatives, some past senators, and a few just dignitaries from states. That's pretty much what the makeup of a normal convention would have been in the history.
Right.
And we have history to rely on. There's actually, and most people don't know this because it's not taught in American history, but there's been over 27 interstate conventions thus far in our history. We just haven't.
I thought there was like 30.
This.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there were some. They've just been uncovered. So, yes, we're over 30
right.
now, but the
right.
the most recent one hasn't been since the 1920s. So it's been about
right.
100 years. So it's outside of our scope of understanding. So what we're trying to do is a lot of education. And we haven't had a general convention since the Peace Conference right before the Civil War, trying to stave off the Civil War by proposing an amendment. Which almost
right.
worked. If they would have used Article 5, it would have had a chance, but they didn't. So
right. Yeah, it's. I'll tell you what. I watched the event on. I didn't watch it live. I didn't watch it live. I was unable to do that. But I did watch it over the weekend. It's about 7 hours of video,
mm-hmm.
and it's available online. And I've applied a link for it. And so I encourage people to go in there and look at that. And and you don't have to watch it all at once. You can stop it and go and do something else. But I know some people on the weekend watch 2 or 3 or 4 movies. And so if you're
yep.
willing to do that, you can invest yourself a little bit of time and educate yourself on this process, because I'll tell you, I was really impressed by the way that all these commissioners handled themselves. They took
uh-huh.
this. I mean, this was a mock-up. This was a dry run. It was a practice or whatever. But had every appearance to me of the real thing. I mean, mm-hmm. these people took this seriously. They were just like going up, well, this doesn't count, so well, you know, I'm going to let this go. No, if they had an objection, they objected, and they made their case. And I saw in at least a few cases where like the person who had drafted the proposal went, hey, you're right, let's change it. You know,
absolutely.
And so I thought that was very good.
I saw the same thing. Obviously, I was there in attendance for the entire event. And then also the day before, what we showed online were the committees. And I had the pleasure of serving as secretary in one of the in the committee for term limits and judicial restraints. So I was the one actually they were submitting the particular amendments to me, and I was having to quickly typing them up and putting them on the screen for everybody to look at. And so the lively debate in there. Robust.
I bet.
It was wonderful to see all 50 states and each one of those committees going and really hammering out which one's going to be able, are we going to ratify or be able to ratify this? Is this something we can sell to the people of our state so we can get ratification? Those were the type of debates that were being had, and it was wonderful. It was great. I had so much work going into this, and then after that, I was just a facilitator. I just took notes. And then when you saw on TV, that was all hands off. The representatives and senators and the commissioners all just ran with it. The rules were there in order, and that was exactly what happened. It was them running with what the parameters were of a convention, and that was fun. It was just fun to watch, to be a witness of.
Yeah, and like I said, I thought it was very interesting. Excuse me. In particular, the 16th Amendment and income tax and the idea of a fair tax or flat tax, whatever like mm-hmm. that, has always been very appealing to me because we need to get away from this system that we've got for sure. It's just made us all slaves, and we need to be able to figure out a way around that. And I thought it was very interesting because the initial proposal basically included the flat tax, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. The fair tax, the consumption
tax.
Yeah,
the original one did. Mm-hmm. And it was stripped out.
It was stripped.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And I watched that. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the debate, and I thought every one of those guys and gals that objected to it were also in favor of the fair tax. They just
mm-hmm.
didn't like what this amendment did with it in there. And so I thought that was very, very good. In other words, they put the country and the Constitution and the process above their personal desires, which I found very, very refreshing.
And the product that came out of it, I think, was very solid. And the fact that what it did, and actually we can run through the particular topics that came out of the convention.
Let's do that before we run out of time. We've got about 16 minutes.
Okay, so the one we're talking about was requiring a supermajority for federal taxes and a repeal of the 16th Amendment. So
right.
It included all that, but it didn't say how the federal government could raise the tax. It limited it as far as, because the 16th Amendment allows the federal government to directly tax the incomes of individuals. So basically they can't do that anymore. So before the 16th Amendment, the federal government taxed the states. And so by repealing the 16th Amendment, it's up to each state to figure out how that federal government is paid and how those taxes need to be raised within their borders. And I think that is still a solid option and a great thing for federalism for having each
absolutely.
State. If Texas wants to go to a complete consumption tax like a fair tax, they are more than – that's their prerogative. And then Kansas, for instance, it could be a hybrid, or in some states it could be completely income. So it's the thing that the founders envisioned more than national sales tax would be. So I really like the product, even though I'm a huge fair tax individual. I think the states should be in charge of that and how they fund the federal government. And that puts more of the the state's in charge of that purse string.
Right.
So
yeah, and
I
the
like
whole
that.
The whole purpose initially, of course, of the census was for representation and also for the taxation,
mm-hmm.
because everything was apportioned out in relation to the states and their population, so that
That's
one
correct.
State wasn't harder than another and all like that. And so that just takes it back to that original intent, which is great. And like I said, we saw that. I really liked the way that ended up. And I did get kind of a kick out of somebody wanted to strike the 3/5 out of that. And
right.
somebody else said, well, then basically then you might as well take that whole section out.
Right.
And they kind of went, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
so they did have a vote on that. They did have a vote on it, and it was hard for him to even get a second for that motion. That
I know there was, yeah,
I
thought there was this pregnant pause for waiting for
yes.
a second, and somebody finally did.
Yes.
And then I think those were the only
yes.
two votes that it got.
I think so. I think it was like Connecticut and some other state, you know, and it just kind of proves the fact that, you know, there is different mindsets in each of these states. And, you know, the good thing is we saw the process work in a lot of instances. And another one was another amendment that didn't make it. It made it out of committee, but it didn't make the floor vote, and that was the line item veto for the president. And,
right, I thought that was interesting,
It came out of committee, and there was some issue on germaneness to limiting, placing further limits on the size, scope, and jurisdiction, as well as fiscal restraints. And the chair actually ruled it in germaneness. It was ruled germane because it was adding a fiscal restraint because of it was able to have a line item veto only on fiscal items. So
okay.
that's how it was worded. And that's why it was real germane. But after we went through that and the people were like, well, are you sure? Because it seemed like it's stretching and maybe increasing Congress's power or the president's power. They quickly died on the floor. Nobody wanted it. So they quickly called a vote and it died. It wasn't even close, if I remember. I think it
right.
only had 18 votes for. So
wow.
that was pretty interesting to witness. And then some of the other ones that made it out, the one that I've got them all listed, but the requiring the states to approve any increase in the national debt.
Yeah,
so
that's a great one.
If they want to increase national debt, instead of just doing their normal thing, you know, passing this on the bus.
Right.
Well, they don't even budget anymore, so I don't
know.
You know, it's one of those things where the state has to approve it, and it's actually worded pretty good. You know, no public debt shall be increased except upon recorded vote of 2/3 of each House of Congress, and then no state or any subdivision thereof shall be compelled or coerced by Congress or the president to appropriate money.
And that's what we were talking about before, right?
Yeah, exactly. So then we got the 16th Amendment being repealed. So those two were out. And then limiting federal overreach by returning the Commerce Clause to its original meaning. I think that was probably one of the best ones.
Yeah, that's huge. That one and the 16th Amendment would be the two biggest ones to me.
Yeah. So we know that the Commerce Clause is the most abused clause in the Constitution. So anything that generates commerce essentially is what the Supreme Court has ruled that fits under the Commerce Clause, even if it doesn't cross state lines as the founders originally intended it. So they redefined all that. So it actually reads, the power of Congress to regulate the commerce among the several states shall be limited to the regulation of sale, shipment, transportation, or other movement of goods, articles, or persons. Congress may not regulate activity solely because it affects commerce among the several states. And
yep.
then Section 2 is the power of Congress to make all laws that are necessary and proper to regulate commerce among the several states or with foreign nations shall not be construed to include the power to regulate or prohibit any activity that is confined within a single state, regardless of effects outside that particular state. So I think, you know, just clarifying that and putting in bold letters, it's really hamstrings the Supreme Court, where they can't make these bogus rulings on the Commerce Clause and allow Congress to make these crazy laws. Especially, I'll give you an example around Obamacare. You know that a lot of
right.
that fell under the Commerce Clause. So
yeah, exactly.
So the So, and then the fourth one was limiting the power of the federal regulations by giving an easy congressional override. So it provided a mechanism that Congress has to actually vote on regulations handed out by federal regulatory agencies, and if just a simple bare thin majority wants it, the Congress has to vote on every one of them. So,
right.
And if they don't vote, then it doesn't become a regulation. So
yeah, I think it was 180 days or something like that. And if they don't, if they don't vote, then it just goes away.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And then the last one, or actually the fifth one, is to give the states the power to abrogate any federal law, regulation, or executive order. So people always talk about the 10th Amendment, right? And people always say nullification is the rightful remedy. But how does that look, or how does that affect, or how do you do that? And there is, you know, there's been several attempts at this of trying to interpose and become in between the people and the federal government, but there really hasn't been any success in that arena, just because there is no action plan for it. What this allows is actually writes an action plan for that procedure. It really gives teeth to the 10th Amendment.
Right.
And then, of course, that's a huge one in my mind, because I think by a 3/5 majority of the states, again, we wouldn't have some crazy things out there like Obamacare. That would have been stricken down pretty quickly
yes.
by the states. And then the last one was probably one of the most popular ones going into this whole thing, and that was term limits on Congress. So,
right.
So, you know, and I love the fact that it was retroactive as well.
Yes,
so,
that's what I was going to say. That was perfect, you know, because they say, well, okay, it was you're limited to so many terms, whatever. And by the way, all the ones you've already served count.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, there was a lot of debate on this one, and it ended up being 6 full terms in the House and 2 full terms in the Senate. So
theoretically,
somebody could still serve 24 years in Washington. But think about what we've got now. We've got people that are twice that long in D.C.
Right.
So
right.
was it as short as I would have liked? No, but this was something that it was way better than some of the proposals I saw from people that didn't like term limits. So
right.
I think this
that's a the term limits is really one of those things that's got people on both sides of it, you know, from on both sides of the aisle, really, you know, because they look at it and they go, well, you know, I mean, originally it was the people are the term limits. We don't like you, we get rid of you. But of course, as we've become more less of a republic and more of a democracy, people are voting their pocketbooks. And all like that, and so it becomes a little bit easier to buy votes and keep yourself in, and so it's like you said, it can't be a bad thing. There's just no point in being there for that long. I can't imagine why you would want to be, but you know, that's not me.
No. So yeah, some of the biggest argument against term limits is the institutional knowledge that is lost. Believe and I
good.
I
want to lose all
head,
of that.
Yes, my head was going to explode when I heard this, because they were talking about 18 years in both houses, and I'm like, oh my God, that's 36 years. Why would we want anybody to have 40 years in Washington D.C.? They become it's just unreal to have that mindset, that institutional knowledge. Yeah, it's like being in prison. The longer you're there, the more institutionalized you are.
Yeah, institutional knowledge is the whole problem. That's why.
Exactly. Let's get some new blood flowing into Washington, D.C. on a regular basis. How about that? And I figure 24 years is still long enough where you're still going to have some of that institutional knowledge, I would think.
Yep.
I mean, good grief. So.
I can see it. I've kind of looked at it from the standpoint of, if we really could put people in on notice, or however you want to call it. I'm sorry about that. If we could put people on notice about about the way they're serving and what they're doing, could limit their power significantly, they wouldn't have any reason to stay. you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things like that that, I mean, but that becomes a harder thing to do. It's easier just to, you know, to limit their stay than it is to limit their power.
Absolutely.
They're always going to figure out a way to get around that.
Absolutely. And, you know, today is a real good day to have me on. I know that we have a big debate coming up here in just a few minutes, but the thing is, you know, this is the first probably presidential election that I really haven't paid much attention to. And I'll tell you the real reason why. You know, yes, I pay attention. I understand what's going on, and I'm very in tune with that. But I really don't think or can't even fathom, or should we, any of us, really think that a president is going to fix this country. I've outlined some of the problems that we have out there. We don't want a dictator that's going to come in and make some of these changes. We really should be thinking about the constitutional remedy, and this is the process that goes through it. You know, you see these never Trump hashtags, right, and never Hillary hashtags. It should be never mind, honestly.
Yeah.
This should be the biggest thing that's going on right now in politics. And it was really kind of sad to see that the mainstream media really not pay attention. And I'm glad that you're having me on tonight to talk about it. And just remember when we're having this debate here and we're all laughing about all the antics that are going on, that there is a solution. There really is. And it's
absolutely
right there, hidden in plain sight in the Constitution. We just need to get involved in the Convention of States project and help our state legislators realize that this is the power that was given to them, the only power that was truly given to them by our founding fathers, and it's written right in the United States Constitution. They have the power to rein in the federal government. We just got to empower them to understand it and to know about it, and it takes activists all throughout the country to do it. We've got about a million and a half activists right now in the field, which is exciting.
We only need about 10 million more would be about right, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to catch up like wildfire. And it has grown tenfold since, you know, in the last year and a half. So it's going at an exponential pace. And I expect after the election here, it's even going to get even faster and more furious as the state legislatures all start meeting again here in January.
Right. Well, and as you say, as we look at the choices we have for president this year, like you said, I think that makes the biggest case for convention of states ever. I wrote an article here sometime back entitled "The President Is Not Really That Important," and we need to start paying attention to what really the president's for. I say, you know, we don't have a king, and we don't have a dictator, and we don't want one. But we always seem to like the king and the dictator that is on our side. And we need to learn, we need to learn that even if he's on our side, that he's not good for us.
That's right.
And that's a tough lesson.
Yes, it is. You know, and I'm on the, this is part of, I mean, you've got Madison right in your name, right? The group that you're a part of, right?
that's why it's there.
Yeah, Madison, you know, in 1830, so after 40 years of living under the Constitution as it was formed, right, he was obviously the father of the Constitution. He took the most copious notes in the whole process and wrote it out. But I love the letter he wrote in 1830 to Everett. And if you don't know about this letter that he wrote, please Google it. But his words are so, so very important. He actually outlines what we're supposed to do. And his last thing he says, as far as the remedies, it says, should the provisions of this Constitution as here reviewed by be found not to secure the government and rights of the states against usurpations and abuses on the part of the United States, the final resort within the purview of the Constitution lies in an amendment of the Constitution according to the process applicable by the states. So, come on.
Exactly.
It's time to use it.
Pay attention. Absolutely. David, I really appreciate it. Our time is up. We appreciate your efforts both as a volunteer and also as an employee for the Convention of States. Thank you so much for coming on and everything you've done. And for everybody out there listening, it's conventionofstates.com or cosaction.com. Go in there, volunteer. Do what you can, even if it's just emailing representatives and things like that. Those are all important things that we can be involved in And certainly, we always need district captains and such. So get involved in this. And if you want to, you know, have something more to do than just vote in November, this is your option.
Absolutely.
Thanks again,
thanks,
David.
Mike.
All right. Mm-hmm. Good night. Good night, America. Thank you for listening.